Welcome back to the Nova Stream podcast for the week of July 16th. I am your host, Alistair Chua, and with me I have...
Ryan, hi guys.
Hey everyone, it's Todd here.
Yay, it's just the three of us this week. Doesn't it feel weird?
Yes, very weird.
It's the original gang.
The original gang. Nice. Like we had Josh last week and then it was just you two the week before.
It's like a rotating sitcom of sorts.
I know.
Like a 90s sitcom which wasn't all that funny, but people still watch.
I don't know. I think I'm hilarious.
Depending on how much he's had to drink. Because you get...
We need to do a podcast where we get completely negative. the word.
That could work. That could work.
That'd anyway. Be a very R-rated podcast.
Anyway, we've got a lot to get through this week, surprisingly. Well, not surprisingly, with Comic-Con happening, so many, my phone was going nuts this weekend with just, this has been announced, this has been announced, this has been announced, this is being released. So I think we'll start off with the Marvel Movies update. Now what's known as Phase 2. I don't know if you guys got to have a look at the Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yeah, that looked pretty sweet.
Rocket reading up on it, yeah.
Like, seriously, no one can ever pay out Aquaman again when you have a hero named Rocket Raccoon. Seriously. I'm excited because it does look awesome. But it's kind of like...
I love your...
What?
I love your devotion to Aquaman. It's very, very good of you, but I think that Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, Aquaman's got something to watch out for.
Okay. Well, we got some new titles for sequels and new movies. So, Ant-Man, I don't honestly know that much about it, except it sounds a bit ridiculous. But... You know, I'll give it a shot. Does anyone know anything about Ant-Man?
The only thing I know about Ant-Man is that he was one of the founders of the original Avengers. So everyone, when the Avengers was announced as having the team that it had, a lot of people who were big Avengers fans were all up in arms going, "Oh, where's Ant-Man? You guys suck." So that's about all I know about Ant-Man.
Okay. And sequels to some of our faves, Iron Man 3 with no subtitle, which is fine, I guess. The sequel to Thor being Thor the Dark World, coming out 11th of August 2013, so nearly just over a year away.
I think that's 8th of November.
Yeah, Americans. Bastards. And then Captain America, The Winter Soldier. Now, I think a better title would have been Captain America, The Naked Soldier. Or maybe Captain America, The Porno Soldier.
Well, yeah, you're entitled to your own opinion. For sure.
And that's on the 4th of the 4th, 2014. So they've pretty much booked themselves out for a while, and The Guardians of the Galaxy is 2014 as well, and Ant-Man is 2013. So that's pretty, like, that was pretty big, I thought. Good to hear all of that's going ahead. I think the thing that shocked me more was the Australian box office. Did anyone look at the box office update today?
I can't say that I did, sorry, mate.
No, I'm sorry.
Well, I am delighted to tell you, and this brings me so much joy, Ted whooped the ass out of The Amazing Spider-Man and took out the number one spot.
I haven't seen Ted, so I cannot pass judgment as much as I would like to.
Wow. Wow, wow. And Ted was only playing in 365 theatres and Spider-Man was playing in 581.
I'm just having a look at this now.
So happy. So happy. So happy. Not because I hate Spider-Man, but I thought Ted was a better movie. as a movie. And wow, Brave's still in the top five, so that's still holding on. Poor little Katy Perry is at number six. But really, did we really think that movie would do well?
I like that she tried.
But Spider-Man did do well in the UK and US, straight to number one in the UK, and went up to number one in the US. Bad news is for Spider-Man in Australia, The Dark Knight's out this week, and I don't think it has any chance of not being number one.
Yeah, that's going to be number one all around the world.
There's more of an established franchise. There's more fans of that movie franchise before you jump down my throat. And I read some early reviews on Empire today, and apparently it's like they've all given it 5 out of 5. And that's a really big call.
Yeah, I've been reading a couple of the reviews of it today. They've all been, you know, 4 out of 5, 5 out of 5, 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
It's getting a lot of big scores. The biggest comment that I'm seeing coming out of it is that if you really liked Batman Begins, then you'll love The Dark Knight Rises. If you thought that The Dark Knight was better than Batman Begins, then you're a sad little person who really won't find anything better than The Dark Knight, so don't even bother.
Well, I want to marry that reviewer, if they're a girl.
So they're comparing it, thinking the first one is better than the second one.
I think it is.
The second one's better than the first one.
I think it is.
Batman Begins shat all over The Dark Knight, easily.
But The Dark Knight had better action, and I thought Christian Bale was better, and I thought Heath Ledger is the best character I've seen out of, you know, a lot of best superhero villain I've seen in a long time. So,
and Anne Hathaway has been getting rave reviews about Catwoman, which I'm like, yay! Gotta love Catwoman, gotta love her.
Yeah, the only downside that I've been reading is that Bane isn't as interesting a bad guy as what the Joker was.
It's a hard act to follow.
Yeah.
And he was never much of a character actor, Bane, anyway, in all the incarnations. He's fairly sort of...
Well, he's a meathead, isn't he?
Yeah, pretty much. P.S. Todd, have you seen him without the mask on?
As in general, like in real life, or in the movie?
In general.
Oh yeah, he's up there.
He's smoking.
Just, wow.
Woo! Yeah. Seriously, it's worth the price of admission alone. So, I'm off Wednesday night to see Batman Begins plus The Dark Knight plus The Dark Knight Rises from 6 p.m. till 3 a.m. So I'm going to be all Batmaned up and out.
Cool story.
I know, I'm so excited. So with that, we will move on to my favourite little section, True Blood with Toddles. Now, Toddles, just before you start, I just want to play you something, and then you can start. Yeah.
Andy, Lafayette, Tiara, Jason, Bill, Sam, Eric Norton, Terry Bilson, Jesse, Pam, Sam, Alcine, Bill Compton, Steve, Jack, Jason, Sophie, Andy Belfort, Bill, True Blood with Toddles. True Blood with Toddles. His name is Toddles.
Go, Todd.
I don't have any words. Oh, my God. If you can't tell, I'm crying from you.
That was your intro. Go for it.
Wow, okay. How do you... Oh, my God, you have completely blown my mind. I was thinking, where have you downloaded that from? Oh, my God, he's singing it and it's my name. What's going on?
What happened this week, Toddles?
This week, well, I'm very happy to say much improvement on last week's talkathon, which is quite nice. Back to some action, actually stuff happening as well. Some of the plot lines are kind of coming together, so I don't have to worry too much. I know I crap on every week about the 29 plots plus for True Blood. But this time it's opening. It was the opening scene, which was just, which was going to go into awesomeness, and then Suki spewed forth all over our seat shoes, and priceless that she can't always get her way in the bedroom, as she had the last few seasons with all of her vampire, let's say, like man whores, can we say?
Yes, you can say that.
She gets around. Edit. Yeah. No, Jake, you've really spun me out with that theme song.
Well, while you're thinking, I'm just going to make my little comment. And I know you will attack me for this, and I pray that you don't. I just want to say that I thought that this episode was the best episode of True Blood I've seen in the last three seasons.
I'm really inclined to agree with you.
Like, wow. So much happened. I was interested for the whole episode. I didn't even look at my phone, and that never happens unless an episode's really good. And that had me hooked. Like, the last 5 minutes, I was a mess. Go!
Hey everyone, True Blood with Tuttles. Anyone else think that this week was possibly the best week they've had, if not this season, of the last 2-3 seasons?
Yes.
Everyone jump in.
Great.
Yeah, I guess so.
Why do you just say you guess so?
I don't know, I'm still annoyed with Lafayette being a bitch, I suppose.
Oh, his plot can take a side seat. I don't care much for what's happening with him. And what was with that bit at the end with Jesus suddenly appearing out of nowhere?
Yeah, see, I've been waiting for that since, you know, the start of this season. I thought that he'd be playing a much bigger role in this season than what he has so far. But I don't know, I guess he had to... They had to make him fight his demons and get over everything before they could bring Jesus back, so... Yeah.
True.
True.
But anyway, it was awesome, even from the beginning when everyone thought that Suki was finally going to bag a third freaking hot guy in the show.
A third different species, like, or whatever.
Three of them so far. And I'm sort of including Sam, even though they never really got together. But that's what they played on season one. And she does what most girls do in real life and throws up everywhere, which I think is outstanding. And speaking of throwing up...
This is not the time for personal stories.
I was not going to bring that
This
up,
is not the time for personal stories.
Now that you mentioned it's viewboard.
No.
And no sooner does she throw up a low brow seat than her two ex vampire boyfriends come along and try to coerce her into this job to help find Russ Lexington. However, she delivers, I think, the best line in the episode, where she goes, "Can I swear in this one as well?"
Basically, yes, go for it.
Like, this shit, alright, I'll give up. And she just goes, she doesn't even question or, like, try and do any sort of, you know, reasoning of the situation. She just goes, yeah, whatever, if I'm going to die.
What I've been thinking for a while is, and I kind of think this with all these shows, like Vampire Diaries, blah, blah, blah. I think, seriously, you're into your season four, season fives now. Get the fuck out of there. Like, pack up your shit and leave. Like, seriously, if you stay around, then, you know, anything that happens, I don't feel sorry for you.
Agreed.
Oh, go on, Ryan.
I just agreed. You know, it's pretty hard to take seriously that all this crap, all these Maynards and bloody witch doctors and everything, all managed to come to Bon Ton and have their little gathering around Bon Ton.
Like, at least Buffy had a hell mouth. That was the reason.
But yeah.
What's Bon Ton? Yeah.
Did you guys watch Eureka?
No.
No. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Do you know the plot of Eureka?
No.
I do, yeah.
Okay. I find that just relates a bit as well, because it's this town full of mad scientists. Even though they're not mad, they're just, like, mixed up. And every single week, something happens that puts either the town or the world, or at least some characters, in some kind of jeopardy. And this has been going on for 5 years.
Well, you'd be happy then that there's only a couple more episodes left and it's finished.
Yeah, I mean, I do love that show. It is my favourite, and I'll be very excited to see that go. But that's another topic for another podcast.
Well, that's the whole point with Eureka, is that, you know, it's a bit of a parody of all those other science fiction TV shows. Like, it is sort of serious, but, you know, the whole premise is a joke, and so they've got no problems with having some world issues happen every single episode. So, but True Blood's different to that. It just seems that trouble always finds them in Bon Ton for no particular reason.
I think the best part of the ep was when Tara and Jessica started becoming friends. And then she
was trying to find someone to relate to.
Yeah, I really liked that. And then she goes and does it with Hoyt, and I'm like, oh, wow, wow, wow. Like, it was just so good. I really, like, I even gave them a clap after it finished and said to my TV, thank fuck you're back.
Was it a slow, sarcastic clap? I really didn't take much away from that scene. Hoyt is such...
No, the end of the episode.
Oh, okay.
Hey, I thought you were clapping Hoyt and Jessica there, and I was
thinking, no.
I was going to say, yeah.
Clapping the episode in general.
No, I think my favourite part of the episode was probably maybe Terry's storyline a little bit. How everyone thought, oh, okay, they're just crazy because they've had, like, war shit going on. And there is actually, you know, a new demon, because they didn't have enough of those in the entire show, actually stalking them. And
that, I actually like that storyline. Really, I like it now. Like, that makes more sense than a lot of the other storylines I got going.
Which was weird, because when it first started, we really didn't like it. But then, I started to really like it last week. I started to really like it last week when they started doing the first few flashbacks. And, you know, now it's starting to really come to fruition. I reckon this is going to be a really good storyline.
Yeah.
It's the best storyline of the year. Hooray!
And hopefully they finish it this season and we don't have to worry to get about it again in the future. Terry and Arlene go back to being, you know, side characters at the back, and we can just focus on some smaller subplots.
Exactly. That would be really good.
They managed to go 2 years without really directly involving them.
Which was good.
And that was good, because they were the partial observers that went, what the fuck is this going on? Like, watching everyone around them go through all this stuff, and we're laughing, we were sort of agreeing with them, and now they're getting caught up in the supernatural soap opera that's happening now.
And hopefully this is the catalyst to make them move away, and then they're not in the show anymore. It would suck, because I think Arlene's really good for the show, but it would make sense that people are finally starting to move away.
Yeah.
Yeah. When it's been going on for this long, they need to do either some mega change or just cancel, because it's never just going to keep doing the same thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Or keeping the same sort of level of quality all this time.
Yeah.
I think once this season's over, I think we need to have a separate podcast just for True Blood. and do a bit of a little Toddles host True Blood spectacular. And we can come up with a new theme song for that. And
please.
And kind of reflect on the season and, like, the show as a whole, I think, and that'd be really good. Anyway.
We could do a special at the end of the season and talk about, retrospectively, where it's come from and where it's going.
Yes, and where it can possibly be headed. I think that sounds great. So, yeah, we'll do that once the season's over. So stay tuned, listeners, for that. Thank you, Toddles, for that update. I hope you love your new theme song. It's only temporary, don't worry.
Oh, thank
there
you.
There's a better one coming soon.
Yeah, there's a much better one coming soon.
I just thought that'd be a little fun.
Couldn't get any worse, if I'm going to be correctly honest.
Oh, you should have heard the first version. It was worse. Anyway, moving on now. I saw a really good movie this week. Really good. And I was really surprised. Because I think you hear the word Australian movie, and what do you think?
Overacting, very stereotypical Aussie accents, and throw another shrimp on Barbie.
Todd?
I think a lot more of the misses than the hits. Because I could count the hits on one hand, and that's kind of sad. You shouldn't have to do that.
Well, Todd, you should get your other hand ready. Because I saw a movie this week called Not Suitable for Children, starring Ryan Kwanten, who is also from True Blood, Toddles, Ryan Corr from Packed to the Rafters, and newcomer Sarah Snook. And I can say, and you will not pay me out for this, that we have, like, a limited amount of Australian movies released every year. There's a couple. And this is one of the best ones I've seen in the last few years. It's a romantic comedy. And I think Australia's attempts at romantic comedies in the past have kind of sucked, to be honest. And this movie just gets everything right. It was a complete surprise. The premise is kind of ridiculous, and not ridiculous in a bad way, just ridiculous, like, is this meant to be a comedy? Basically, Ryan Kwanten is the lead, he plays Jonah. He finds a cancerous lump and basically is told that he's not able to have children. And I'm sitting there going, is this meant to be a comedy? Because that's not really that funny. But they played out this whole storyline of, if he wants to have kids, he needs to do it now. And he's got 3 weeks to find someone and settle down, have a kid, and have the lump removed and go on from there. And he's got his crazy housemate, Gus, who's Ryan Corr, who holds these massive parties in their Sydney house. And Stevie is Sarah Snook. She's the third housemate. And she's like the mature one with all the zingers and sarcastic comments. So, Todd, you'll love her. And she was very Emma Stone-ish. She's got really good comedic timing. And she also has red locks. So I don't know if that was it as well. But the movie's really funny and dramatic. And it just gets a really good blend. Now, I can say that I'm not biased because I did not know when I watched it. I only found out after I researched that the script was written by Offspring creator Michael Lucas. So I can say that I liked it before I knew that it was, you know, done by Offspring people. So, And it was directed by Peter Templeman, who was the director of Bogan Pride. Does anyone remember that TV show?
Yeah, I remember that.
Did anyone else?
Rebel Wilson, wasn't it?
Yeah, on SBS.
Yeah.
So, like, it was the perfect match. Great writer, great director, and an amazing cast. And it was actually pretty faultless. Like, there weren't a lot of things to pick at. And I think a lot of people should get out there and see this movie and support Australian movies because, yeah, we do have some pretty bad ones. But when we get it right, we get it right, and they're really good. And this is one of those movies that you should be going to see. So I do have a review up on NervousDreamMovie.com. Just while we're on the subject of Australian movies, I just wanted to, you know, maybe talk about what, you know, some of our favourites, some of our, you know, more non-favourites, I guess, and...
technical term there.
Yeah, that was very technical. So, why don't we start with someone who's not me? So, Ryan, go for it.
So, three of my not favourite Australian movies.
We'll start off with the negative. So, give us the three not favourites.
Oh, start with the three favourites or the
no,
three...
No, three non-favourites.
Pieces of crap.
Yeah.
You keep cutting out, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, we'll start with the three non-favourites.
Three non-favourites. Okay, three least favourite. The first one I'm going to have to say is Australia. I know. I'm supposed to like this movie. It's got Hugh Jackman, it's got Nicole Kidman, it's directed by Baz Luhrmann. It was the Australian movie to end all Australian movies, and it was going to increase tourism and do all these great things. And there were some funny scenes. I remember a few really good scenes in there, but there was just a lot of crap in there, a lot of filler content. It went for, you know, a stupid amount of time, and I think they just went way too ochre, and I don't know, I'm from the country, and the way that they were sort of portraying it, it wasn't exactly accurate. It was just over dramatized, and yeah, I just didn't really like it that much. Number two, and another big gasp here, will be Bootman.
No gasp for me.
The story of tap dancing steelworkers from Newcastle. It's just the accents, really. It's like they made the accents go super ochre, super Australian. Everything was shrimp on the Barbie. It was just so over the top. There was a good little story there about Sam Worthington being the older brother and falling off the crane and dying.
It sounds like a great storyline.
Sounds like a real...
real comedy there.
Yes. Yeah. But, you know, there really isn't, you know, too much memorable about that movie, except that it launched, was it Dean Cain's Tap Dogs?
And then Dean Cain.
Dean Perry, whatever.
Adam Garcia.
Yeah. Adam Garcia is the guy who went on to do Coyote Ugly and all that. But Dean Perry is the guy who choreographed it all, and he's got the show Tap Dogs that tours the world doing all the tap dancing.
I could just imagine Dean Cain as a tap dancing clerk.
He's got nothing else to do.
Lois and Clark tap dancing adventures.
And my third worst movie is The Wog Boy. If anyone remembers that.
Yes.
Nick Giannopoulos.
I didn't see that one, unfortunately.
It wasn't that bad.
It wasn't that bad when I first watched it.
I think I can think of a lot of worse Aussie movies than The Wog Boy. A lot. But anyway, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, I thought it was okay when I first saw it. I was really young and I didn't know any better. And I thought it was pretty funny, but then The Wog Boy 2 came out. And I thought, oh, you know, I might watch The Wog Boy 1 and just see and just remember the good times. And I watched it and it was just the worst movie, and I don't know how I ever laughed at it. It's so immature and it's offensive and it's just, yeah, not very good at all.
True. Okay, so we'll move on to totals. Toddles, top three, worst.
Top three, I'll go for my top three. The thing is, the ones that I have seen, I have actually enjoyed.
Ooh.
There's a couple. Okay, let's just start with top three.
Now, yeah, this is the top three. This is the top three bad ones, remember?
The worst ones.
Top three, oh, bad ones. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
Sorry.
I'm going to put... Is Moulin Rouge Australian?
Yes.
Okay, and number one...
What?
I know,
yeah, I'm about to reach through this microphone and whoop your ass.
I don't know. There's no words to describe. I don't hate the movie. I intensely dislike it with all of the fibre of my being. Not to be dramatic. number two, I'm going to put in... Oh, jeez, what haven't I seen Australian movies? Wow, it's really hard.
You really should have prepared, Todd.
And you actually wrote it in an email.
I wrote my favourite ones in the email. My least favourite ones, I have this, like, ability to forget about.
Well, if you don't have three, that's fine. I think Moulin Rouge is offensive enough.
Can I say Moulin Rouge three times?
Yes, you can.
Okay, Moulin Rouge, Moulin Rouge.
I've now lost all respect for you.
So, well, I hated the first one.
My three worst Australian movies. And I'm going to be stoned for saying this. Priscilla, Queen of the Desert. I think that it was just... Oh, I just hated it. I just hated everything about it. And I know I'm meant to love it, but I just thought it was absolute crap. And wasn't a fan. But that's just me.
Gay movie for straight people, isn't it?
I think it is, yeah.
That's a good one. I enjoyed it.
But I know a lot of gay people that like it, but, you know, they're weird. So number two would be... And this is so hard because there's so many bad ones. Would have to be The Bank. I don't know if anyone saw this.
No.
But it was a thriller try-hard, and it was horrible. It was just meant to be, like, gritty and dark, and it was just boring and horrible. And then I think the third worst would have to be... Definitely Ned Kelly.
The Heath Ledger one?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't have seen that. It was
pure tripe. And it should never be shown anywhere. And horrible load of crap.
Didn't it have Naomi Watts as well?
Yes, it did. And I judged her so hard for doing
that. I used to like her.
Uh-huh. Not good. And, like, there's also been some bad ones, like Rogue.
I loved Rogue.
Horrible. Horrible.
It was horrible. Oh, my God, shut your face.
And things like...
A few controversies amongst the team.
Well, at least I didn't say Moulin Rouge.
Oh.
Right. So that's the three.
I have taste, thank you very much.
So now that we have voiced our opinions about the bad ones, let's be nice and move on to the good ones. Who wants to start us off?
Go, Tom.
Okay. I know we've already said it, but I loved Rogue.
Why?
Because one, Radha Mitchell, who is just golden. I love everything she does.
Again, why?
And it's a giant monster. I love the monster movies. This one is the best Australian monster movie that I think has ever made.
I think it's the only Australian monster movie ever made.
See, I look at monster movies like Sharktopus and stuff like that, which is supposed to be...
Yeah,
which is supposed to be B-grade sending up of those monster movies. My problem with Rogue was that they were trying to be serious, and they thought they were doing like a serious horror film, and it was just so bad.
And I'll admit that apparently, I think I heard somewhere that Rada Mitchell had to get vocal coaching to get her Australian accent back. That's why she was very awkward in the beginning of the film. If you remember her doing that tour, like when she starts doing the tour at the beginning, she turns it on, and I think that's hilarious. But maybe it isn't monster territory, but it's just a fun, you know, horror-ish movie. Anyway, I'm carrying on. Wolf Creek.
Oh, okay, yeah, I'll give you
that. I'm
going
to put up as well. That's,
yeah.
Can I say Australia's best horror movie that we've ever made?
True, I'll give you that.
I haven't seen it, but yeah, it's one of those ones that's on my to-see list.
Wow. Okay.
And considering it looks fairly low budget, it's actually quite scary, and John Jarrett is just shivers down his spine. He's scary good at that role.
See, I just like the idea of the handyman and the husband from Better Homes and Gardens turning out to be this massive serial killer in outback Western Australia.
I wonder what
Northern Territory, doll.
Wherever. I don't care. Australia, mate.
Oh, God. Next.
Number three. I had to toss up between these two. Tomorrow When the War Began.
Yay!
I thought it was actually quite cool. I'd never read any of the books. I didn't know what it was about. And I put it on, and it was just an awesome Australian action movie, which never happens.
Agreed.
Unless you're going as far back as, like, Mad Max's. And also, on the serious, dramatical side, there's a movie called Beautiful Kate. I don't know if anyone's heard of this one. I think the cinema auteurs will know more about this. It has Rachel Griffiths, Ben Mendelsohn, Brian Brown, the very touching family drama with a little bit of incest on the side.
Nice.
We love that.
Love a bit of incest. Ryan.
Sorry, just to follow that up.
I know. How do you follow incest?
You follow it with the castle.
Yes.
The castle is my favourite Australian film. Story of a guy who's living under the flight path at the Melbourne airport, and the airport development crew asking them to move out, and they're going to pay for them to move out and get a new home, but these guys won't move out. It's their home. They want to stay in their home, and they take it to the highest court of Australia to make sure they get to keep their home. It's all about the Marbo. It's the vibe, and I reckon that's a great film.
This film I liked, but it kind of made me cringe a little bit because of how Aussie it is. It was like kind of Aussie shoving down your throat a little bit.
But I think that's what I like about it. my number two film was one that I've only seen a few weeks ago. It's called The Cup, and it's a film about the Melbourne Cup, about Damien Oliver, who was due to ride, and just before his ride was about to start, his brother fell off a horse and died, and he nearly didn't make it. And when he started coming back, there was only a week to go till the Melbourne Cup, and he was losing all of his races, and you know, everyone wanted him to pull out, but he rode anyway, and he won the Melbourne Cup. And that was back on Media Puzzle, I think. It's a story from a number of years ago, and it's one where I thought Australian movies finally got drama right, because so many times they just overact and it just comes across as being just over the top and unbelievable. But you know, Stephen Curry starred in this one, and I thought he was excellent. I think they even had Brian Gleeson. He's that Irish international star, so he added a lot of star power to the cup.
Cool.
You guys seen it?
No, I did want to, though.
I thought I was going to hate it. I thought, oh, what the hell do I want to watch an Australian movie about the Melbourne Cup for? It's going to be it's going to be crap.
That's what I thought. That's why I didn't bother.
Yeah.
Did you kiss this or your other half?
No, we were at a friend's place who was really into horse racing. He goes, oh, you've got to see this. It's about the Melbourne Cup. And we're going, oh, God. And we're going, oh, we'll watch it for a bit and then we'll leave. And we kept watching it and we kept watching it and it was getting really interesting and we end up staying for the whole movie. And I was surprised by how much I enjoyed it.
Nice.
My number three is a classic. It's Breaker Morant. You guys seen Breaker Morant?
No.
No.
Yeah. So this is a war movie. It's set during the Boer War, I think. I can't remember which war it is. That's how good I am. It's about a couple of Australian, I think three Australian lieutenants who get court-martialed for executing prisoners, but they were executing prisoners as commanded by their superior officers, and it was to deflect all the attention away from the war crimes that their senior officers were doing. And so these three guys were brought up for trial, and they were made an example of to say, hey, we're stamping out these war crimes out of the war, and it was all completely unfair and the trial was rigged, and the guys end up getting executed for it. So yeah, it's one of those really, really powerful films that I think everyone should at least watch once.
Cool. Sounds good.
Go on, let's see, what are your...
Well, mine are very different from yours. So I'll start off, I'm going to go 3-1, just to build an atmosphere or something. So number three, I would have to say, would be Red Dog. It completely took me by surprise. I remember seeing the trailer and going, oh God, a movie about an American in Australia? Oh, this could not get worse. And it was one of the most funniest and heartwarming movies we've ever done. It was really good. Set in Perth in the 70s, in the mining boom. And it was a really, really good story about this infamous cattle dog that basically took care of the whole town. And yeah, it was a really good movie. Great acting, great story. Really sad. Don't see it without a box of tissues.
Any film with an animal in it normally ends in tears, doesn't it?
Sorry?
Any film with an animal
in
it normally
ends in tears, doesn't it? I have come to the decision that if it's not rated G and it's got an animal in it, I don't want to watch it because I will be a mess. Marley and Me took me a week to get over. I was an absolute freaking mess. I can't deal when dogs die. I can't. It's too much.
Anyway. So I'm a bad person again and I haven't seen Red Dog.
Oh,
I haven't seen Wolf Creek, and I haven't seen Red Dog.
You call yourself an Australian.
I know, rude. Number two, and this is quite a surprising one, and I know you'll probably shock me for this. We've already actually talked about it. Not suitable for children. It has shot up to my number two spot, because I have never really enjoyed an Australian movie like that before. So it's going to my number two for my top Australian movies of all time. Big call, but I think it's justified. Now, my number one. This could change in September after Kath and Kim Dorella is released. But for now, number one goes to Muriel's Wedding.
Yep.
That's in the spot.
One of the funniest movies ever. And just so good. Great characters, quirky storyline. Everything about it was great. And yeah, it's going to be pretty tough to beat, but I have a feeling that Kath and Kim Dorella might. So
That's Can I throw two honourable mentions in as well?
Yes.
Gallipoli, I completely forgot about until Ryan said Breaker Moran. And has anyone seen Snowtown yet?
No, but I keep hearing bad things.
Oh, okay. But, you know, keep doing this, eh? That's right.
Yeah. Do you have any honourable mentions?
Yeah, I've got a few. They didn't quite make it into my best list because I don't think they're the best films, but they did a lot for Australian film, and that would be Mad Max. They did a lot to put Australia on the map in terms of filmmaking. No one thought Australia could make an action film until they saw that, and once they saw that, people started bringing their business down under to start making films. So, you know, that's got to be up there as one of the most influential Australian films of all time. Same with Crocodile Dundee, the first one. Not the other two, three, however many they've made. I don't care about the rest of them, but yeah, Crocodile Dundee was one of the first Australian films to get nominated for an Oscar. I think Breaker Morant was the first one to get nominated for an Oscar, and Crocodile Dundee might have been the second. Yeah, it's sort of reinforced a lot of stereotypes over in the US, but yeah, it did wonders for our image, for our tourism, and because of that, we're getting a lot of people who know about Australia and want to come visit.
Cool. My honourable mentions are a little more childish. Babe, 1995.
Oh yeah, it's not that Babe.
It's like one of Australia's highest grossing films. And seriously, everyone loved Babe. And I think that did a lot for us as well. Strictly Ballroom, I'm surprised no one mentioned that. But I guess with the Moulin Rouge hating, it's probably up there with that.
I hope you're not surprised that I didn't mention it.
No, I'm not surprised you didn't mention it. It's great. Cozzy with Toni Collette and Geoffrey Rush.
I've never heard of that. Does that make me a bad person?
No.
It's, I didn't get to see that one.
It's really quite funny. It's very early Geoffrey Rush and Toni Collette. It was done just after Muriel's Wedding. Really good. About a group of people in an insane asylum putting on a musical. Seriously hilarious. And one more honourable mention, Looking for Ella Brandy. I know people hate this movie, but I actually thought it was a really good job at doing a teen movie for Australia, and I think we got it right.
I don't know many people who actually hate it, to be honest. Everyone who I've talked to really enjoyed it, so yeah.
So
there's my...
Well, look, I think we're getting a lot more Australian movies coming out. Like this year, we've got Not Suitable for Children, then The Sapphire's coming out, which stars Jessica Mowboy. Now I can't think of a name. Unprofesh. Deborah Mailman, that's it. And the Irish guy from Bridesmaids. I can't think of his name.
Chris O'Dowd.
That's it. That's getting rave reviews from the Cannes Film Festival. That's going to be out later on in the year. And, of course, Catherine Kim Durella, the film. So it's going to be a massive year for Australian movies. And I really think that, you know, while there have been some pretty bad ones, there's been a lot of good ones. And I actually think we talked about a lot of more good ones than bad ones. So, overall, I think when we get it right, we get it right. But, you know, sometimes it's just not good
at all. It loses its way.
Yeah. Needs a little bit more guidance, a little bit more government funding.
When it's good, it's really good. And when it's bad, it's shocking.
Yeah. Unwatchable at times. Anyway, so that's about it, I think. Does anyone else have anything else to bring up? Or anything else have anything else? Let's try that again. Edit. So, does anyone else have any... I can't talk tonight!
Okay. I think you've got a few more things.
Edit. So, does anyone have anything else that they want to bring up tonight?
That's it from me.
Dark Knight Rises, Thursday. Wednesday night. I know we've pretty brought it up, but I was really unimpressed until I saw the latest trailer that actually had stuff happening in it. Mm. It actually looks really cool.
It's pretty exciting. And next week, we're going to have a couple of interviews on the show. The first one will be with a guy named Joe, who'll be our very first international guest. Calling us from Dallas to talk about his new film production company and what he's doing. And we're also going to be chatting to Beck, who is the leader of the Offspring fan base. She runs the Twitter account and the websites, and we'll be chatting to her about all things Offspring, and by we, I mean me. All about the season finale and the show being given a 2-season renewal based on this season's figures. So I'll be chatting with her all about that. And that will be in next week's podcast as well. So it's going to be pretty big. And I'm sure that we will all be talking about The Dark Knight Rises, because are we all going to see it?
I think it's a given.
Yes.
Yes. So, I don't know. Some of us might love it, some of us might hate it.
I'll be interested to see if it's not going to be... If it's going to actually... Isn't it 2.5 hours or something like that?
It's close... Isn't it close to 3?
Closer to 3, yeah.
Yeah.
If they actually, you know, don't bloat it out with exposition like Inception a little bit. I mean, every second of Inception was cool, but...
It's 3 hours, but you hardly notice that it's 3 hours because it moves so fast.
Oh, I like movies that do that.
Because you've got the two previous movies to give you all the background that you need.
Mm.
So it just starts from without too much.
It starts 8 years later, and Bruce Wayne's become a bit of a recluse and hasn't left the Wayne Manor in a long time, so yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm sure we'll have plenty to discuss next week, but till then, thanks guys for sticking around tonight.
Not a problem.
Thanks for having
me. No worries, and we will talk to you again next week.
Good night.
Bye.
See ya.
Be sure to check out our new websites, www.novastreamtv.com, for all your latest TV news, www.novastreammovie.com for all your movie needs, www.novastreammusic.com for all the latest and greatest music news, reviews, and latest songs to stream, and finally, www.novastreamgames.com for all your latest gaming news and reviews. Thanks for listening to the Novastream Media Podcast. Have a great week.